Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Billy B.J. Jones, and
this is Nadine Tabs,
and we are the Fright Guys.
What's up, guys?
All right.
You know, it's another episode. Thank you for being with us. It's September 18th, 2020, live show Eastern Standard Time, and I'm very happy to see you, my brother Nadine, for another exciting episode. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's always a fun time to do this. I mean, I know that we do it every couple of weeks, and we have our people, our listeners that are, you know, waiting anxiously in between, right, from one episode to another, especially now as the spooky season is upon us. But, you know, for us, it's the spooky season every day, all the time. So we're good to go. I want to start off today's show. I wanted to give some love to some people because, you know, Billy, you know very well that we get emails all the time and phone calls and messages through social media. And we get a lot of love out there, as you know. So there's a few people that have shown us quite a bit of love this weekend. I just want to take a moment and mention them. So tell people about some amazing, these people are doing some amazing things out there. So the first one is Poltergeist. If you look on Instagram, it's Poltergeist underscore OD. And he has this incredible talent where he takes horror films and he writes and creates songs based upon the clips of the horror films. I saw one on Pumpkinhead that was absolutely amazing, and he promoted for us this week the show on his feed, so we appreciate it, Poltergeist OD. And also Stitch of the Witch 666. You love that name, don't you? Think about
yeah.
Stitch of the Witch 666. And if you follow her on Instagram, and also the same name of her Etsy store. So I purchased, she was kind enough that she promoted for us this week on her feed, and she makes her own face covering mask, but the way we like, with the spooky and the dark and the, you know, all the stuff that we're into. And I bought these glow-in-the-dark vampire fang mask. And let me tell you something, it was so comfortable. I wore it yesterday, and I was just really, really happy with it. So I want to thank Stitch of the Witch 666 and Poltergeist OD for their love this week. Also, Graphaholics, as you know, they helped with our logo this week. And Karina Mariaco, who's always giving us shout-outs on Fright Talk. So thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to everybody on social media that shows us the love. We truly, truly appreciate it. And all I can say is, and I'm sure Billy agrees with me, keep that love coming.
Yeah, absolutely, and I ditto everything that Deem said. Thank you, all of these creatives and designers and fans. Thank you for your continued support. I also want to give a shout out to our sponsor. Have you ever been in a situation that your insurance won't cover? Have you had coverage for what you thought you did? Now more than ever, everyone needs quality health insurance. Make sure you have the right plan to cover every situation. Call my friend John Stalter today for a free quote at 815-822-3557. That's 815-822-3557. And also, speaking of lines, if you want to speak to us in this live podcast, you can call us at 347-539-5372. Again, that is 347-539-5372. Our inbox and Instagram line in Nadine's lines are available. Email on the inbox is everydayfolkslisten@gmail.com. And on Instagram, NTABSCH, T-A-B-S-C-H. Look him up and DM him. We'll love your questions. You know, Nadine, when we came up with this show, we talked about weeks ago, actually a couple months ago, we started lining up things because you know the season is coming. fall starts next week.
I can't wait. Let me tell you, I cannot wait.
Absolutely. And this topic today is a special one for us because it's one of the most iconic figures in the world, and that is the vampire.
Yeah.
And Nadine, do you remember the first time you were introduced or had an introduction to Dracula or a vampire?
So when I was a kid, I mean, you mentioned this before in the previous shows, that when we were kids of the 80s, know what we're talking about, the torture device I'm about to mention. It was a box that would bring your Halloween costume, which was like a plastic that would just like stick to your skin. And then it would be a plastic mask. And then obviously I'd wear just, you know, the vampire mask or a Dracula mask. I remember being in elementary and so 1 year dressing as Dracula and vampire, but not really knowing what it was. And then until growing up as a teenager and stuff like that, I mean, you get an understanding of what vampires are or were in the general sense. But, you know, I did watch, at least for one season, and you know, the Buffy, the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
But before that, I watched the movie. And I actually think the movie might have been the first, like, might have been the first vampire movie that I had seen that when I was old enough to recognize, way before the show ever came out. What about you, Billy? I mean, vampires, as we know, they're very iconic. What was your first introduction to vampires?
Count Chocula. Count Chocula. You know, I didn't understand it. It was brown. It tasted good. And those commercials were creepy. Do you remember those commercials? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Frankenberry.
And so, yeah, and he had the widow's peak, right? Dracula's always either purple in complexion. In cartoons, he always seems to be a male, and he has that accent to talk like this. And but then as I became older and I grew older, I remember the original movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And there's another one I want to throw out, the original Fright Night.
Oh, the movie
Salem's Lot. Those movies were such reminders. I said, oh my gosh, horrific. And beautifully horrific depictions of a vampire. And you know what's interesting? Vampires themselves, the history of the vampire, it's very fascinating itself, and it transcends itself beyond America. But there's something I thought about the other day that when it comes to these vampires, why are vampires so sensualized or sexualized sometimes? Because they have these certain abilities, right? In Hollywood silver screens, when we're watching movies, you know, there are all these things that, you know, they seem to be very attractive people in most cases, or they become victims or outcasts of some sort. And there's a story much similar to Frankenstein, actually. You know, these outcasts, these superhuman outcasts that speaks to human follies. So I think the vampire himself or herself is one of the most unforgettable, iconic figures in the world.
Yeah, and, you know, going back... for years, if you're familiar with the magazine Fangoria, Fangoria, basically all things horror, you know, which is the things that we enjoy. And if you go back around that time, you had the introduction of Vampirella in comics. And Vampirella was, seductive, was written to be seductive, good-looking woman vampire. And so it was almost this idea that she was so good looking that you didn't care that she was going to kill you. And then definitely in Hollywood, they definitely play on that. You know, the vampires are irresistible. It's part of their charm, you know. And listen, we know a few years ago, well, more than a few years ago, they came out with those movies that were in the books that, and I'm trying to not say that they were bad because I only read the first book, but I wasn't a fan of the movies of the Twilight. When the books came out, when the movies came out, people were, you know,
They were going crazy.
A lot of people were going crazy. Yeah. So I think Hollywood does a good job actually at doing that. I think that there is a certain allure and charm to it. But I also think that mystery in general attracts people. So I think people are attracted to trying to find out what the mystery about it is, or what's the charm or the allure of it.
and vampires here in America, it's, you know, Halloween's upon us in a matter of weeks. And I can't recall of all of the parties or festivals you and I have been, I can recall. There is always someone in the audience who's going to dress up as this character, right? And the iconic elements of the vampire, at least the modernized vampire, or even Bram Stoker's Dracula. One of my first horror novels ever read was Abraham Stoker's Stoker's Dracula. And I loved it so much. And then I even loved the movie adaptation to that novel.
Yeah.
I thought it was very, very well done. And it's interesting because that story in itself, again, someone who is outcast, ostracized, but yet has to feed off of man, right, in order to live. And the idea that, well, being in a cold castle, and this is the very Gothic, the very Victorian perspective,
yeah,
right? But being able to be an outcast, but yet come and dwell and want something from humanity, not just the blood, but also the idea of love, that was very interesting. And I think that storyline has transformed into other forms. Like you have the movie Underworld, which is a great series of, not only you got vampires, you got werewolves up in there too. And and here again, Celine, who is the main protagonist of the storyline, and her story and her backstory is so incredibly done. It's an example here that the vampire, regardless of generations, it will continue to flourish.
Yes, I agree with that. And definitely, you know, it's funny because if you look at these movies and how these books are written, I agree with you. Bram Stoker's Dracula is a masterpiece, absolutely, through and through. I always felt, and tell me if you feel the same way, Billy, you know, that typical pitchfork and torches, the villagers going, and I think to myself, well, who's the real monster?
Right.
The person who's being, or the creature who is trying to be left alone, or those that are coming after him or her with pitchforks and torches, right? So, but it does play to a very interesting part. And, you know, the Dracula story is very loosely based on Vladimir Pale.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very loosely based. We have to talk about him a little bit. It's very loosely based on his life. I mean, the love stories and some of the towns and stuff like that. But a lot of things, when they write, whether it's a screenplay or a novel, they do tend to make this, or they'll try to make a monster have almost affection. Like, it's impossible to think that a monster could have affection. And then, but I have to be honest, I've never seen vampires or Frankensteins. I don't see them as the monsters because I don't see them as ever doing anything that merits an angry mob.
That's interesting. Let's talk about the iconic elements that make a vampire, right? So when you think of a vampire, Nadine, what are some of the things that come to mind from physical attributes to behavior?
Well, you got the pale skin from lack of sunlight. Okay.
Right.
You clearly have the fangs, but the fangs change though, because sometimes the fangs are not, they do not descend until they're about to bite someone in some cases, and depending on how it's described. So you definitely have the fangs. You had mentioned before, in the old classical description of vampires, you had the widow's peak. And the description of vampires has changed. If you think of Nosferatu.
Right.
Enough for all to change completely from what Dracula is described as.
Right.
Of course, they got the cross around the neck, right? The cape, you know, turning into a bat, usually slender or well-built, usually tall. I don't remember ever seeing a movie or reading a book with short, stubby vampires.
And if they did, they became victims of circumstances.
That's right.
You know, and here's the other thing. There's a lot of what we see as the modern day version of the vampire. It emanates from several periods of human history. And I love to use the Victorian period as an example because the Victorians had a lot going on, as you may know, recall, in America, in the world. I mean, from TB, tuberculosis, they were dealing with all kinds of, there was an evolution and change in society there was, you know, modernization of things. I mean, we're talking near the turn of the century. So people, especially when they died young or they died prematurely, if science couldn't answer it at its best in that time, they resorted to other forms of superstition or supernatural or religion in order to help interpret.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That reminds me of that town in Poland in the 17th and 18th century where they had that cemetery in a small village, and there was at least, I don't remember if it was six individuals or there was quite a few individuals that were buried, but they were buried in a way that there was clearly a concern. Obviously, archaeologists afterwards see there's clearly a concern that them coming back to life was a problem. And these are people that probably had illnesses, as you stated. And even though they had their illnesses, at that time, things were very easily written off to supernatural things that couldn't be explained. So in this particular example, in this town in Poland, they would place sharp curved farming tools called sickles across the bodies of the deceased and rocks under the chins. So if this body came back to life, they would get decapitated. They would also break the bones after death and cross them over the body as well. So all of these things, and it was at that time believed to be because these individuals were vampires.
Right, right. And you know, a lot of these practices that you speak of carry over from the Middle Ages. And,
yes.
And it's interesting because I always wonder 100 years from now or 200 out, when we're all no longer here, I'm always wondering what people are going to say of us and what will have evolved then that will be prehistoric, you know, then that we enjoy now. And a lot of it starts with, you know, an understanding the world was very conservative in many cases when it had religious context, you know, to help interpret things. And now that things have become, I don't know if they're more balanced, but at least there's a more of a distribution of ideas and understandings of the world. You know, so the duality of science versus supernatural religion, you know, there's this, it's this little weird triangle that seems to play out. And the vampire seems to live or dwell among all of them. And I know now we're already a quarter into the show here. And I see that some of you are sending in some emails here. They're coming in live, Nadine. They're listening. Thank you for listening to my call.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank you so much. We know you do. And thank you. And you can continue to send those emails in at everydayfolkslisten@gmail.com or DM Nadine on Intabs on Instagram. And, of course, 347-539-5372 is our line. Let's hit some of these questions, Nadine. I think you got a couple.
Yeah, let's see here, because there's so many good questions, and I want to make sure that I ask. Let's see. All right, so this is a very good question, and it is something I want to spend some time talking about. Lance asks, some say that modern-day vampires exist. What's your take on this phenomenon? Now, I don't necessarily know if it's a phenomenon, but yes, modern-day vampires do exist because people do live in vampire communities. As a matter of fact, people that willingly live a life of vampirism, right? So, which is a community. These are people that willingly accept blood or animal blood or human blood from those people that give it up. There's even a donor bill of rights that focuses on the well-being of those people giving blood. Now, this doesn't mean that the person may have a gothic fashion style, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to, wear a cape or anything like that. I mean, they truly walk among us. So there is definitely a community of that, and it's how people choose to live. Some wear prosthetic things, some don't. A lot of people in that communities, it's vampire community, or living vampires, as they're called, community. They do sleep during the day, and they do, you know, they work at night or they're up at night. And in this particular phenomenon, because I don't want to, like, you know, I don't want to, like, shadow it with ignorance. A lot of times they have reported that when they, from an early age, if they didn't have the blood, the animal blood, the human blood, whatever it was, that they would actually physically feel ill. Now, scientifically and medically speaking, I don't know where that tie-in connection is, because I'm not nor a scientist nor a doctor. I'm, you know, if anything, a historian. So what is your take on it? So yes, the answer is yes, this phenomenon does exist. And what's your take on this, Billy?
It's interesting. I'm looking at it from two contexts. Remember when we went to Tate's around your birthday?
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
I bought a comic book. And I'm trying to remember the name of that character because there's a movie coming out. Is it Morbius? What's the name?
Morbius.
Morbius. So Morbius. Let's take Morbius for an example because that's about to come out. The last living vampire, as Marvel claims he is, right? Here's something about him that kind of relates to what modern day vampires are alleged to do. You know, some are no longer using the blood. Some are, you know, drawing from the blood and things like that. But other versions of vampires are also drawing out energy. And there's a thought that there's an extraction of energy, which makes a person, a vampire as well. And so there's that new form, that neo version of what vampires can be like today. And that's interesting because Morbius does that. Like he has this plasma that's inside of him that he draws from his bones, that he feeds off of. And so, and yet he's like bat-like. So he has these elements of a bat. And we all know that the bats are one of the most iconic lycanthropic figures or icons or symbols of a vampire. And so I think that now today, I remember in college, it reminds me of what I saw when I was radio station general manager of my college radio station at FIU. And we used to have the radio shows, different shows that were specialty shows. And I remember we had a goth night. And I remember these kids coming in with capes. This was not even October. This was like a November or December. They came with their capes. They had their fangs. I'm like, what is going on, right? And then I realized, hold on a minute. They weren't drinking blood. They weren't doing anything. It was just part of their get-up to enjoy for the moment. So some who are true vampires probably would see that as a disregard, disrespectful to who they are, while they were just enjoying the occasion. So I do feel that there is a new version, the neo version of vampires. You know, yes, the blood is one of the more, elements or remnants of what it is. But I think more so, too, there's this energetic aspect, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and you raised a valid point there as far as, when you talk about, people living as vampires and then, their fashion style may be considered what is goth or what some would consider emo or whatever the case is. And you know very well, as I do, I'm all about people wearing and looking however they want to wear, however they want to look, somebody can very easily dress and wear very, I'm going to say, stereotypical gothic styles and fashion and have absolutely nothing to do with a vampire community or feeding off energy. The drinking of the blood and all that existed or exists in certain communities. I read a couple articles online, and I think the most recent article on it was in 2015. Right, so we're talking about a few years ago, but definitely I agree with you that the energy portion of it is just a lifestyle. Not saying it's right, not saying it's wrong, because nobody a judge. It's just a lifestyle.
Yeah, I got a question here for you, Nadine, that's coming in from Stan. Stan says the battle between werewolves and vampires is iconic. What's your take on the Underworld movie series?
I actually enjoyed the Underworld movie series quite a bit. I will tell you that I enjoyed the first movie more than I enjoyed the other one. So, sometimes it's one of those things where the sequels aren't as good. I also feel the same way about Blade. But I actually enjoyed those movies quite a bit, and I thought that the character, was it Celine, right? Celine was the character in that movie. Yeah, I did very much like the tie-in with the Lycans and the vampires, but I thought that movie was good. And also, just visually speaking, it had such a dark, a dark glow effect to it throughout the entire movie that I actually appreciated. But I actually thought that movie was pretty good, considering, I know it came out years ago, but considering it's one of the more modern of the vampire movies, I thought they did an excellent job. And I know you have definitely seen all of the Underworld movies, Billy, and what are your thoughts on it? I mean, do you feel the same way I do, that perhaps the first one was better, or did you like them all equally?
I like them all equally, and I'll tell you why. The title itself is Underworld, and here are these vampires who are living among humans in the modern times, and having a backstory. But in their backstory, there's this history, and the conflict is imminent between them and the vampires. But what's more interesting is this, the fact that even among themselves, there's conflict very similar that mirrors what we deal with in humanity. You know, idea of wanting to have power, authority, wanting to usurp that authority in a very appropriate way for personal gain. And then there was this betrayal, family betrayal. There are all these themes that are like so common. They were more human than I ever think of vampires ever been in terms of the modernization of what vampires can do as they evolve in a modern society. So that's what I liked about it so much. And I got a props to the special effects. My goodness.
Absolutely.
And you're right, that glow, the color, the hues, were phenomenal. I thought that, now that you think about it, I remember seeing shades of blues and grays and white. They played on color very well, which further reinforced the intensity and the dark underworld of what it meant. But the underworld became the upper world at some point, which I thought was pretty cool too.
No, the movies were definitely enjoyable. The tie-in with the vampires, because sometimes you'll see a vampire movie and it's just about vampires. The tie-in with the werewolf portion, the lichens, I thought was pretty genius.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe we should cover werewolves at some point.
Now, Billy, there's a question coming in here. I'm gonna ask this to you, and I'm gonna respond to it also. But here's a question. It's from Jermaine, and it's an excellent question. What's worse, to live immortal as a vampire or to die tragically as a mortal human?
Ooh, I think this question reminds me of something that a weird, crazy conversation I was having with frat brothers when we were in college. And I remember him saying one time, if I was a vampire, he asked me, well, if you're a vampire, who are you going to take with you? I said, what do you mean take with you? And he said, well, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to take. I'm going to bite you. He looked at me, and I'm biting my mother. He said, I need people I can trust in eternity. And so when he said, I had to laugh, but at some point I'm thinking, wait a minute. It's a very lonely life being a vampire if you can be 300 or 400 centuries years old or millennia old. And I think it's kind of sad if you look at it from the storyline that we're so commonly introduced to it to, where your loved ones die on unless they become immortal like you. But if you're a daywalker, and you're able to live in the light. But if not, you're forever there, not be able to see light. And I like seeing light. I feel there are certain things of being human that I enjoy. But to escape the flesh's rage, and if no other misery yet age, and I'm citing something from John Donne, actually, the poet, it's to escape those challenges would be kind of awesome, right? So there, yeah. I teeter on the fence of the two.
So there is something tragic about seeing everybody that's important to you that you care about pass on and you're still around. At some point, you're the only one. Unless, like you said, you know, there are vampires right along with you. But in this particular question, that doesn't seem like it's the option, right? So it seems like your choice is either living as a vampire. I mean, what are the positives? Well, you're not really going to have health issues as long as you stay out of the sunlight. I do agree with you that I do like the sunlight. I might like the night a little bit more and the dark a little bit more. So I think I can deal with that without a problem. But I don't know. I think that if a lot of good things have happened in humanity through time and a lot of terrible things have happened, and I think in the world we live in, I wouldn't want to live in this world for 400 years.
Especially the state of things today.
There's a lot going on.
I mean, we got the microscopic enemy pandemic around, coronavirus. But if I'm a vampire, I'm assuming I'll be immune to that. So that kind of is a plus on that side, right? Yeah, it's true. I know that. That's not real dark. I'm sorry, folks. That wasn't right. That wasn't right.
A little insensitive there, Billy, but it's all right. Vampires can take it. Our listeners can take it. Don't you worry about it.
We're in the half hour, Mindy. Can you believe it?
Half hour. I don't want to forget. Because I forgot in the last show. And that was my fault, Billy. But I can't forget this show. Follow our Instagram and Facebook page @FrightTalk, guys. follow us, see all the cool stuff that we post, engage us in conversation, post send questions to us that you want. So follow us at Fright Talk Guys on Instagram and Facebook.
And we love when you hear your feedback and your comments. And we, of course, even love you more when you listen to our show. Got a question for you here from Juan Nadim. There's one coming in now I'm going to read to you. Juan asked the following question. He says, what makes a good vampire movie these days? No one is hardly making them anymore. Perhaps they are overdone?
I think Juan is correct. To a certain extent, they are overdone because you think to yourself, where can it go from here? There's definitely more vampire movies than there are werewolf movies. Which I enjoy both. But I think that was part of the reason why Blade was a success and why Underworld was a success, because
right.
It was outside of that norm. But I do think it gets to a point where you're like, okay, you have to do something new. And though I'm not particularly fond of the Twilight franchise, just because it's not my thing, there were certain aspects of that where they reinvented the vampire, where that's not your typical vampire. Okay, they could be out in the sunlight and they
right.
glitter or sparkle. I don't even know what they do, or something to that effect, right? So I think it's very difficult because people that we discussed in the beginning of the show have a preconceived notion of what a vampire is supposed to be and not what a vampire could be.
That's true. I think a good vampire today, I'm curious to see what Morbius is going to do. Because he's a bat, though. I can't agree, reminding myself he's a bat, not necessarily a vampire. Because if any other iconic character in Marvel or DC I can think of, I always thought Doctor Strange was a vampire for some reason until I saw what he could do. It was just strange at first. And then, so I think that in the end, today's vampire, we're going to see a lot of remakes. Just like we've seen so many remakes of Halloween. From Michael Myers.
Right.
We're going to see
right.
more remakes because each generation wants its own introduction to the classics. And so then the vampire is one of those unforgettable ones. But I think a different version on this would be kind of what Blade did a few years back, which was a comic character as well. I liked Blade so much, that movie, the original. It was so good. And maybe because Wesley Snipes made it look so cool and I wanted to carry the sword, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to be a daywalker, but they took the vampire aspect or the characteristics were part of it. There was this whole other world that they brought in as well. I just thought it was super cool how they were able to marry the two and make it seem so real, like these people really live next door to me. And I thought that was super cool. Or even in the series True Blood. I mean, when we look at the series on HBO, I used to like that series, and I didn't like how it ended. I'll say that for the record. But I did like that True Blood. It was in the South. It had a storyline. It's based on the Sookie Stackhouse Chronicles. It's actually based on a novel, and the story itself, it has witches. There are all kind of folks that come into the storyline in series of the book. But
right.
the key to that True Blood was the blood, the drink that was created as a synthetic to keep the vampires living among us. I thought that was super cool to have that mix. But I will say this. Being a vampire and transforming does not look fun. That looks painful. I don't want to be bitten. I don't want to be bitten. I don't want to bite others unless it's something, you know, that I can consume, that I enjoy consuming. So it looked like the transformation just seems so painful sometimes.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny because when you think of the transformation process, I think that one of the movies that captured the transformation in a very eloquent way was Interview with a Vampire. And where Brad Pitt turns into a vampire or is converted to a vampire and he wakes up and the description is, you know, I'm starting to see these things around me more vividly. It was almost as if he was describing if things were coming to life more. I thought that description was very good because I agree with you. In typical books, it sounds very painful. Same thing as somebody's converting to a werewolf or transforming to a werewolf. That looks really painful as well. So I agree with you. I don't know if I want to go through all that, but I mean, the payoff is immortality. So,
right.
I have a question here for you, Billy. It says, this is from Stanley.
Okay.
Stanley says, I visited Romania where Vladimir once lived. I enjoyed it very much. I hear there is a location in America where there's a community of vampires. What do you think about that? And we already kind of discussed that. Well, we discussed people living as vampires. But the Romania part, he was interested, obviously, went to Romania. Now, I do want to say that I hope he did go to the correct location, because Vlad the Impaler did not live in Transylvania proper. If there is a Dracula's castle where Vlad the Impaler never even stepped foot in, which is a tourist attraction. There is another castle which is pretty much a ruin now because of several earthquakes to the area. And in that particular area, which is in the mountains, I think the Ferragaris Mountains, it's really pretty much just a tower from what was left of the castle and some minor other, maybe a few walls or something like that. But hopefully he went to the right one and not the tourist trap. But what is your opinion on this? I mean, definitely, listen, I would love to go, whether it's a tourist trap or the real one, I would love to go regardless.
I think Vlad himself is – well, Romania, Transylvania, it's a very interesting place. I've never been in it, and I've only visited virtually, honestly, folks. And I feel so bad for the folks who are there, because they're – what's the most iconic thing that draws people there? Look, you know, Vlad, you know, Dracula, the iconic Vlad the Impaler. And this Impaler was one of the most brutal people alive, and the things that he had done to people and until he was finally stopped, right? But this man had a very interesting fetish for human destruction. And also, too, a lot of who he is lends itself to some of the characteristics that we see of vampires today. So even going to, I will say this, going to, well, in this case, it's, you know, to Romania, going there, especially at the time of the year when vampires are most celebrated, may be super cool. It's unlike ghosts, where you feel like when I go, I don't know if I'll be charged or bitten, but it just it's cool to say to go there. I think that there is a location. There's a location in New England, actually, that happened in the Middle Ages where there was a family. And I read this a few days ago. There was a family in New England, Rhode Island, New England area, and they were in a small town called Exeter. And these people, this family, the last names were Brown. And Mercy, I'm going to focus on Edwin Brown. Edwin Brown was a man who, entire family was wiped out by tuberculosis. And but as we know today, people who have TB, if you're in close quarters or folks, they all could get wiped out. A whole family could get wiped out. But at the same time, the idea of supernatural or other things taking root, because science had not advanced to understand this, also prevailed. And so to the point of what you mentioned earlier, Nadine, this family, his entire family, the mother, the sister, son, everybody died. And then the family, the townspeople were like, well, we got to go and make sure they're not vampires. So when they opened Mercy Brown, his sister's grave, she was actually turned on her side and her face was flushed. And they automatically thought it was a sign that she had she was risen, she was a vampire. So they immediately extracted her. They took out her heart. They took out her throat. And then they burned her ash, you know, they consumed her into ashes. Then they took her ashes and put it in the elixir and gave it to her brother, Edwin Brown. And, you know, as a hope to kill and banish the vampire from coming. Okay, lo and behold, months later, like within a year, he died of TB as well. And they were farmers. Right. And so here's an example here, right here in America, right in our own, in the East Coast of America, where people were tragically believing what they could believe. We shouldn't judge, but they believe what they believe, and they thought vampires existed in this one particular town.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, speaking of Vlad the Impaler, so nobody's 100% sure. Historians can't agree, let me put it that way, on where he is actually buried. And there's only two locations that they believe he could be buried. And believe it or not, as atrocious as some of the things that he did, both those locations are actually monasteries.
That's funny.
So there's a little bit of irony for you.
I didn't know that. I did not know that. Wow.
He's buried in this monastery. No, he's in this monastery. Okay, but still a monastery. And he did impale people. So, you know, perspective.
Hey, I got a question coming in for you, Nadine, that came in from this person named Mix. We already answered it. Have you seen an interview with a vampire? Did you like it? We kind of answered that already. So, Mix, we talked about that earlier. But I want to go to Dina's question. This one's even better. I'm going to click on it. Are vampire movies overrated, or are there other genres that are just that overrated? I'd love to hear your take on it, Fry Guys.
So, I think that some vampire movies are overrated, absolutely. I think other ones are absolutely great. Look, the remake to what was the one that you referenced earlier from the 80s?
Fright Night?
Fright Night, yeah. You would think I would remember the name, right? Fright Night. So the original one was good. The remake, to me, was absolute garbage. So it was terrible. You know, who was it? Was it Colin Farrell?
Colin Farrell?
Yeah.
It was weird.
Stop it.
Yeah,
all right, don't do that again, Colin Farrell. Please don't. You were not a good vampire, all right? So I think some movies are overrated. I think that because sometimes there's gaps in time when a good vampire movie comes out, after a certain point, people literally thirst the audience for those like us that like the vampire genre, for something to come out. And then when something comes out, you know, they're like, ooh, what? Like, you know, there's great vampire movies. I thought Interview with a Vampire was absolutely phenomenal. I think Tom Cruise's portrayal as a vampire, for being Tom Cruise, was very good, as was that. But then there's also other movies like Vampire in Brooklyn, which was more or less the end of Eddie Murphy's career. There you go. And Dracula 2000, which I was like, okay, these are not good. Like, they shouldn't have. How did they get funded? All right, they were not good movies. So I think in some cases, I don't think vampire movies are overrated. I think some of them are just bad movies.
Yeah, and I will say part of that question that was asked was the overrating of other movies. I always felt, so I have a colleague who loves zombie-related movies. I'm not into zombies. It's not my thing. And there was a time when people were watching Walking Dead, it began to be more than just about the zombies. I got it. But I tried to give it a chance, and it just didn't resonate with me. I thought it was great, you know, and I celebrate and salute the creators of it and the writers all the same. But it just wasn't a show that resonated with me well in terms of, I just thought it was so overrated in that time when I was watching it. Much the same as people thought of True Blood, right? And when they saw True Blood come out, like, oh my gosh.
Right.
And, you know, here's something I thought of, Nadine, which I think it's very important to mention here. Why is it, especially in Interview with a Vampire, Anne Rice, when you wrote this book, and her son also writes books too. But when she wrote that, Queen of the Damned, another great one.
Yeah.
Book in Vampire Lestat, another great book from Anne Rice. She always brings in this homoerotic element or this bisexual reality that comes in. So I guess if you start thinking about it, you know, regardless of what your preference is, whoever, you know, whatever someone's preference is, but if you can live forever and if I still like what I like, I don't think that would change for a century, right? But then some of these vampires and these storylines have become very sexualized in that sense. And they're very free-spirited. I think it's interesting. And it's not that it's a bad thing by all means. I just think it's very interesting how years ago in Interview with a Vampire, Anne Rice was capturing that in a time 30 years back that wasn't as open and understanding of these types of lifestyles that they are today.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think how she wrote the characters, like you're stating, a lot of them did have that homoerotic element for whatever reason. She decided to go that route with them. But I agree with you. I feel that if a vampire was whatever their preference was when they were alive, more or less would be the same preference in the afterlife, right? So I definitely see that. You're right. She did transcend. She was a trendsetter at that particular time with them. You know, it's not the topic that we're discussing, but I think of the show Lucifer and how he plays the devil, and he sleeps with both men and women in that show. And so, which makes sense, because if you think about it, it's about, okay, seduction, the devil, and whatever the case is. So I could kind of feel that same way towards vampires. However, let me say this, that usually happens for male vampires. Very rare that you see that for the female vampires, right? So you don't see a lot of female vampires going towards their own gender, where you're more likely to see that with male vampires.
That's true.
How they're written and how they're portrayed, anyways.
That's true. And I remember in an interview with a vampire, Brad Pitt and I don't remember the name of the characters at the moment, but Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, they had a very interesting relationship, right? It was a very loving, intimate relationship.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's almost like very parental in a sense, you know, between child and
parent.
And that is something that I've always fascinated with vampires, that, you know, honoring me, the one who made you, who came before you, therefore is more stronger than you. And I thought that storyline, that aspect of the storyline in modern times is pretty fascinating. Because we didn't get that entirely in Bram Stoker's Dracula. He wanted Lucy. He was after Lucy and wanted her and desired to have her. Whereas I find that in other characters, we don't see the focus entirely on that anymore. These vampires want anything they want. They want what they want, especially if they're trying to keep up with the modern times.
Right.
And I think, I got one more question for you, and this was coming in from Paolo. Thanks for listening, sir. I'm clicking on it now, Nadine. It says, if being a vampire seems painful to become, what other entities are worse?
I think a werewolf would be worse. I think it would really suck to be a zombie, to be honest with you, at least how they're portrayed.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to be like, you know, falling apart. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. The werewolves, you're right. I agree with that one. I saw American Werewolf in London. Holy moly. Oh, my God. That was the most painful transformation.
Right. I mean, definitely, I definitely, the werewolf one always looks like it's painful and it hurts. Even when they are even written that way. It's not even, as you know, Billy, it's not even just the movies or the shows. That's the way they are written. And, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be a zombie. I wouldn't want to convert to a werewolf. The zombie, I think, to me would be the worst because, like, you're almost just aging at a quicker rate, and I already feel like I'm aging the way I am. Like, I don't want to speed it up. I don't want, like, an appendage, my arm to fall off or anything like that. So, I have a question for you here, Billy, and we've talked a lot about characters and books, and this comes from our good friend Mo. All right, Mo. Says, howdy. List your favorite three vampire characters. His are Selma Hayek from Dusk Till Dawn. She didn't have many lines in that movie, so I have a pretty good idea why she's one of his favorite vampires, but okay, I'll leave it at that. Gary Oldman is Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Stephen Dorff in Blade. So, Billy, top three vampires, what do you think? Let her rip.
Okay, I like Celine from Underworld, number one. I don't remember the name of the person. I forgot Kate Blanchett, I think it's the name who played it. I think that's the name. One, I got to give it up to my boy Wesley Snipes and Blade. I got to give it to him. He really, really turned that role out, too. And then, you know, I'm going to throw a red herring in here. You remember Cheech in Dusk Till Dawn? Cheech and Chong? I think remember when he was at the bordello, and he was at the whatever they call that place where the vampire bar was, where they ended up being locked in. He was so funny, and it was like the best use. It's like, what is he doing in this movie? Get out of here! But I thought it was great seeing the humor. Oh, you know what? Let me add a fourth. I forgot. I need to talk about Aaliyah, Akasha, and Queen of the Damned.
She did such
a great job, and I love watching that movie because it just has such. She was just so alluring, and I remember when she walked into the bar and she was waving and swaying with her body. I was like, "Who is? She looks so good!" And it was such a beautiful, beautiful portrayal of a vampire, a powerful vampire. It was just cool. So I gave four there. How about you?
Yeah. Tom Cruise as Lestat in Interview with the Vampire, I thought was very good. You know, and this is a. He really did. This is before he started jumping off of buildings or whatever the case is. But yes, Tom Cruise as Lestat in Interview with the Vampire, I thought was great. Of course, Gary Oldman as Bram Stoker's Dracula. However, so I'm going to throw this out there. I believe it's well written, so I want to mention this. So it's not necessarily an actor, but the question was about characters. If you have not seen the Castlevania anime on Netflix,
it's so good.
Absolutely amazing. And the way it was written for Dracula, which is Dracul, which is supposed Vlad the Impaler, as the storyline goes, it was phenomenal. So even though it wasn't a live actor, he asked for characters. So I'm going to put that character up there because it was just the right amount of self-loathing, love, and monster all at the same time.
Yeah.
You know that it's done well when you find yourself rooting for the person or rooting for the entity that most people in the film, movie, or book are trying to kill or go against.
Well, you know that anti-hero storyline is very, very common today. We get the Joker, we get all these other examples that are out there. You get Harlequin, she's another example. But to make a vampire that, I have to agree. And you mentioned something earlier. I agree with you. Remember Dracula 2000? I saw that at the movies. I was so ready for something more. And it's one of those movies that I'm thinking, until you mentioned it today, I forgot it even existed. I didn't quite get it, right?
Right.
And around the same time, Queen of the Damned came out around 2001, actually. And it just trumped all that. It was such a good, and maybe because of Aaliyah's passing, that helped reinforce the interest in the movie or the storyline. Because I remember after watching Interview with Queen of the Damned, I didn't enjoy it or appreciate it as much then as I do today.
Right.
You know, so I went through different lenses, and I now realize, comparing to what else is out there, we're not seeing many vampire movies being made, honestly.
We're not. I also thought 30 Days of Night was very good.
That was so good.
I thought that was excellent. That creeped me out. It really did.
Remember that scene when they were in a movie? They were in a grocery store or something. I think it was a little boy or something. And I'm trying to remember that. And it was so. That was such a good. The 30 Days of Night. That was such a good movie. I saw it at the movies. That was a good one. I like that one.
You know, we were talking about, and I was pulling it up on my phone while you were talking because I remember. I forget. But then I remember this quote. We're talking about Interview with a Vampire. I forget that for a small role, Antonio Banderas was in this movie. And he had what I think he played Armand. And he had what I believe was one of the best quotes in a movie. And he says, "I know nothing of God or the devil. I've never seen a vision nor learned a secret that will damn or save my soul." And I just thought that was excellent. An excellent quote. And since we're talking about vampires, I figure what was a better way than to bring it up.
Well, all right. Here's one from Bram Stoker. When Dracula hears the howling, listen to the children of the night. Listen how they scream, the music, the great music, or something like that. I was like, oh, God, this is so creepy. And that was in a black and white movie early in the 20th century. But it's one of those lines where I appreciate good storylines that help make these characters get under my skin. And I don't know if we'll be seeing more vampiric movies like that anytime soon. Not that it's not impossible, but there are some short films. I've been watching the game online that are playing off of it pretty nicely. Some of these shorts that are appearing to folks, that's why I'm trying to make one. These shorts that are appearing on YouTube, hats off to some of these folks. You may want to focus on that at some point, too. Because they're really doing, I saw one that was about a vampire, and it creaked me out. And it was done in somebody's house, entirely in the house, and the camera angles were just superb. So I think we have more options today. And more outlets, like you said, from Netflix, you got Shudder, and of course YouTube.
Yeah.
And there's another one that I just saw recently that I didn't even know existed. And then there's also some things that are coming out on the on Prime. So you got so many options that are coming up now to help bring the vampire lore to a new audience. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I also want to state out there, if any of you that are making short films would like to have a scene where you have Fright Talk guys in it, give us a holler. We'll be there. We have no problem. We'll be in a horror movie without a problem. And
you
know,
kill me. Just make it an honorable death.
Billy, I see our time is kind of winding down. I wanted to mention something. You had mentioned it before we started the show. We got some sad news before the show started. So I didn't want the moment to pass without giving absolute solace and condolences. For those of you that don't know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away today. at the age of 87. She was a feminist icon. She was a trendsetter. And the people, you know, people in this world and this world in general can use more like her. And it's just obviously a huge loss, not only for our country, but it's a loss of really a hero and an icon and a loss to society.
I agree. And, you know, now that you make me think about it, her entire story would make great for a vampire story tale. You know, would that be cool if we take some of these characters? I'm being dead serious. Because of all the contributions she's made, imagine if that was transformed into some kind of like storyline for a vampire. You know, a new life for her, or at least her legacy. That would be super cool.
And, listen, I wish she was an immortal. I really do. I really do. I really do.
Oh, God. You know, folks, we want to say thank you for listening to us today. You know, our next show is in 2 weeks, and it's actually going to be on the first month of two digits, October 2nd, the demon. We're going to be talking about COVID Halloween. That's
COVID
going to be super cool. So those of you out there, if you have ideas or you'd like to chat with us about COVID Halloween, do listen in at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for that particular show. We'll be posting it on the website and on our social media feed. So we hope that you'll be tuning in.
Yeah, we also have, we procured some two giveaways for that show. But as we get closer, I'll let you know what those giveaways are. And right in time for the Halloween season, which is going to be phenomenal. So I'd like to mention again to please follow us on Instagram at Fright Talk Guys. And Facebook, the same thing, is at Fright Talk Guys. Go ahead and give us a follow. And we're actually very approachable people. Send us a message if you want to. It's a question, something you would like to hear us discuss on the show. Now, we do have the lineup pretty much set up for the next several shows, but we're always willing to listen to ideas, and we've also discussed bringing in some guests. So I think when we go through what we have scheduled, that might be we might be bringing that in as well. But again, shout-outs to all of our fans. Again, the people, the Poltergeist OD, Stitch of the Witch 666, Karina Mariaca, Graphaholics, thank you always for your support. And everybody else, give us a follow, and thank you so much for joining us in this time. It has been great. You know, Billy, you ever notice how fast this goes?
It flies. The time flies miraculously. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's because of working with you, brother, and all these listeners, the loyal listeners out there. This is something we started and we really want to continue. Thank you for the continuous support. And we can continue it with your encouragement. So do seek us out. Dean couldn't have said it any better. Until October 2nd, folks, we thank you for joining us, for sort of supporting us. And stay tuned for more programming. Visit us at everydayfolksradio.com, at MTAB on Instagram, at Dr. Billy Jones on Instagram as well. Take care. Good night.
Have a good night.